Well, I figured that whole part was ruined, so we might as well just start shooting the shit.
But I have to listen to everything back in order to cut it. I can't just jump around and find where we pick back up.
All right, how about this? What if I make a loud noise?
That's not, and... no, that's not helpful. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dimebag Podcast, brought to you by J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut. I am Tyler. We're joined today by Russ Steinberg.
Hello.
And Peter Bard.
I wish you wouldn't do me second, because I can never come up with something good that fast.
I go in order of how you appear on the bottom of my Google Hangouts.
I always got to follow Russ, and he's got the perfect thing every time.
Yeah, he said hello.
I said hello.
It was very I know. It's spot on.
And Megan Bard.
Hello.
See, that was good, too. And Kevin Meacham.
Who are you people?
Exactly. And our producer, Alex Cohen.
Hello, hello.
So I guess first order of business, UConn is going back to the Big East. I don't know if anybody had heard.
What? Have we not talked about this?
No, we did, but we're going to mention it at the top of every pod.
Yeah,
that's a joke, because this is the first UConn podcast.
We're under the count? We're under like 250, 250 days now?
250 days. Mm. Shout out Mr. Hotballs.
All right.
Tyler disapproves.
No, that's fine. So the big news this week, and the reason we actually scheduled our first podcast since at least July, is David Benedict somehow wizarded his way into almost completing a football schedule. UConn's first indie season with like only a few months' notice, and I am shockingly impressed by it, and also have no idea how the sport of football works. So I thought maybe, Meach, do you want to jump us through and talk about why some of the names on the schedule are so impressive?
Yeah, I think the key thing is it's really hard to put a football schedule together on short notice. And what Benedict was able to do, which is so impressive, is he broke up three different games and possibly four. We still have to hear from, I think, three more opponents that we have to fill out the schedule with. But he was able to break up a game between Ole Miss and Middle Tennessee State, Virginia and Liberty, San Jose State and Army, and turn those into six games for us. So that's, I mean, that's quite a coup. And it's, you know, it's not like it's the greatest schedule on earth, but it's teams I've heard of mostly. It's going to be a really cool away trip to Mississippi next year. And it's going to be, you know, we're going to have 12 games and probably not two FCS games. So it's pretty astonishing, I think, that Benedict was able to put that together in a span of maybe 4 months.
Who do you guys see? Like, who you just mentioned Ole Miss. Who else on the schedule has you guys kind of pumped up?
Virginia's pretty fun. And I hear there's a rumor that our new cool dad, Tomcat president, is one of the reasons we got Virginia. Because obviously he has connections there, I guess, being at Duke. But that was a rumor that I heard, that he was the one who managed to get Virginia to come hang out with us.
Shout out to Tomcat.
Tomcat. I love his adorable, like, dorky dad Instagram. It's really adorable.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think of the schools we've never been in a conference with, the two schools I most would like to be able to play on a semi-regular basis are Maryland and UVA. You know, especially like those are the kind of schools we want to be.
Yeah.
Like, you know, broadly speaking, like across all of the categories, especially since I want us to add lacrosse again. But my only concern is, you know, that's six games that we got. But in each of those matchups we broke up, our home game is against, like, we have Liberty, we have Middle Tennessee State. And we have
they
Army
haven't
at home.
Actually announced Middle Tennessee State yet, though that is part of the Ole Miss contract that says we will schedule them. So, like, that's not even one of the ones they confirmed was Middle Tennessee State. That's still one of the ones that's, like, up in the air.
Sure. My point being that...
But no, yeah, I'm getting them home.
At some point, we need, like... These are essentially bye games.
Yeah.
And
there's, like, a weird quirk with that one, too. Because Middle Tennessee's keeping the money from Ole Miss.
Yeah, and so these are bye games where we're not getting paid. I mean, it's we're you know, getting paid with a home game from someone else, but obviously that's not, you know, you travel to Ole Miss and you get Middle Tennessee State at home. And that's fine. You know, it's the first year. I will say in future years, more of the Power Conference games need to be at home. I mean, an ideal world, you know, assuming we have like one bye game against a Clemson or a Florida State or something a year, I'd like mostly the rest of the Power Five games against lower tier teams to be home and homes. I mean, we can get it against Indiana and Illinois. I would assume we can, you know, get the same sort of thing against other non-top Power Conference.
They've got Duke, they've got Purdue, they've got Tennessee. Like, there are plenty of other schools willing to do home and homes.
Tennessee's not coming here, though.
Yeah, I don't think Tennessee. If we could get Tennessee, I would be really impressed.
It was originally a home and home, and then it was canceled.
Right. Yeah. We do have one power school coming to the rent in each of the next 4 years. We have Indiana next year, Purdue in 2021, BC in 2022, Duke and NC State in 2023. So that seems to be like a thing that we'll be able to continue to do.
Yeah, and right after the Big East move was announced, Benedict flat out said that multiple Power Fives had reached out to him to talk about home and homes. And, you know, because obviously 2020 schedules were pretty much filled by that point, you know, I think you're going to see them opening up down the road. So I do think that a lot of those Power Conference opponents are going to be home and homes. We'll probably get like Syracuse again. North Carolina is one that's been rumored. A lot of ACC schools, wouldn't be surprised if like Rutgers or Maryland ended up in there as well.
Well, and I think they reported that Syracuse and BC are going to be pretty regular opponents. And obviously for both of those schools, it makes a ton of sense. Good. Because it's easy travel for both of them. And actually, it's also super easy to travel from Raleigh to Hartford. So for UNC, it also makes a lot of sense. But specifically Syracuse and BC, they're right in our backyard. You love to have a little geographic rivalry. And especially when you spend so much of your conference schedule having to travel south, it's probably nice to just keep it in the backyard.
Yeah, and from the perspective of, you know, the North Carolina or the Syracuse, you know, you look at it either one of two ways. Either UConn stays miserable at football and you get a win on your schedule every year where you don't have to pay as much as you would to bring in an FCS school or to bring in, you know, a lower G5 team. Or, you know, UConn picks it up, gets good again, and you've got a fun game. So it's like it's a no-lose scenario for them unless, you know, they lose, which they won't.
And at minimum, it's a team your fans have heard of. Like, yes. It's still a state flagship university, which is, I think that's sort of been an interesting thing about this conversation, because, like, some of the AAC fans who have been in my mentions this week are like, why is, you know, Indiana and Illinois better than ECU and, you know, Tulane or whatever? And it's like, because we're those people. We're a state flagship and they're a state flagship. Like, you guys are not. You're not.
That's the thing that the AAC people still don't understand why we like. And I know we talk shit, and like the AAC is a perfectly fine conference. Of the non-power conferences, it's the best conference.
Yeah,
it just has nothing to do with that.
Overall, it's just we are a terrible fit. We're in the wrong place. We're the wrong kind of school. We like the wrong sports. And so when we have like, yeah, I want to play Indiana because Indiana's a shitty football school that still cares about sports because they're a basketball school. We should play them. We should play Syracuse. We should play Kansas. We should play Duke.
Like Kentucky.
Fine football schools.
Yeah.
But engaged fan bases that will be into playing another like big state school.
Yeah. And then, you know, the response to that has been, well, but you're going to the Big East. DePaul's not a flagship school. Creighton isn't. But they care about the same things that we care about.
Yeah, ideally, we'd be in the ACC. That would be the best fit.
Right.
But it's not fucking happening. So,
right. And at minimum,
Big East is perfectly fine.
And play in front of 15,000 crazy fans. Because, like, when we were going to SMU and Houston and, like,
Tulsa
and Tulane, nobody fucking shows up for the basketball games.
Well, no, SMU did sell out every game. But
But with SMU fans, that's only
40%
of a person.
George W. Bush bought 4,000 tickets. It doesn't count.
No, that's true. No, but I know what you mean. Like, dude, Tulsa and Houston, before they got good, those gyms were empty and it was awful.
Houston
and
was empty, like, when they were good at the beginning.
And even Creighton's, like, worst team is still going to bring 15,000 people into that stadium. And that's awesome.
That's going to be so much fun.
Like, even when they suck, it's going to be great.
Well, I'm very excited about all this. So can we talk about the can we do some irresponsible rumor mongering about the triple header that Benedict was referring to? Because I am like beside myself at the prospect of this amazing potential triple header in New York.
Wait, explain what it is first before we dive in.
So there was an interview this week where Benedict said he's trying to set up basically a 2-day triple header where there would be back-to-back men's and women's basketball games at MSG and then a football game at Yankee Stadium, presumably with the same school in all three sports. And we have done a lot of speculating about how that could potentially work out.
There's one school that makes a lot of sense for that.
There's a couple of schools that make a lot of sense for that.
There's one school that made a lot of sense that I feel like Benedict actually mentioned by name, although I can't remember if he was prompted to.
I think he was prompted to, and he said the conversation had happened, right?
Also, it's Notre Dame.
It is Notre Dame.
So my dark horse here is I would actually love it to be Texas.
Texas would be cool, but I don't know if they're going to come play us in football.
I mean, if it was in Yankee Stadium, they should come and get your like come hang out.
Come kick our ass. It'll be fun.
Kick our ass in New York. And also, I have like a serious love for the Texas men's basketball games because I feel like every time we play Texas,
everyone it's a been classic. Like
an amazing basketball game.
And we play the best game we have all year,
except for the time Marcus White got the ball stuck in the rim and I wanted to die.
That didn't happen. I don't know.
Sorry.
And also, their women's team is fantastic and they're super fun to play. Our parents, Peters and my parents, went to UT for a women's game and said their fans are crazy. They had a great time.
That UT is one of the schools that actually does take women's basketball seriously and has put a lot of resources into that program, and it's getting really good, and they have a really good coach. And like that would be a fun series to have, even if this triple header thing with them didn't happen.
Yeah, I just want to play them in basketball too. But like football, I think would be really cool. And
be cool if we were in the Big 12 then.
Notre Dame would be really cool too, though we do technically have games scheduled with women's basketball, but I'm sure they could like adjust contracts.
Is there a school that's like good in those three and has hockey so we could add ice bus to this?
Notre Dame.
Notre Dame, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Notre Dame. Let's do that.
Boston add College.
Put them at Barclays.
Michigan probably is the other one, although I don't know how good their women's basketball is.
No.
I'm not certain that it's going to be a school that will be thrilled to play in either men's or women's basketball. I think it's going to be it's possible that we are trading a great basketball game for a great football game.
Yeah, one of the things that
like it could be like Penn State.
Yeah.
I'd be fine with that. That still sounds like a lot of fun.
I would be into it, but I could see it being, you know, a program like that who wants the marquee basketball game in New York City and is willing to give us a sort of home game in football in exchange. Like Penn State will never give us a home and home in any other circumstance.
No.
Penn State also
Doesn't Penn State have like 50,000 grads in New York City?
Yeah, I was going to say, even though their basketball team is bad, I feel like the novelty of it would sell a lot of tickets.
Yeah, people would go. Because especially like people are around, they're like, yeah, I'll go to shit both days. Right. It's over the weekend. It could be like a big fun thing.
There's a lot of UConn and Penn State grads in New York City. So like, you know, people are just going to go because they're there.
I mean, assuming it is all the same team that we're talking about for all three games, it really has to be a team that can independently draw football fans to New York.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And
it's a limited pool.
And I do think they would. Obviously, I think UConn would sacrifice the women's basketball portion of that triple header.
I think they'd sacrifice the men's basketball portion. Well, yeah, I think the football game is the key.
Yes, definitely. But I think if they're going to pair any, it would probably be men's basketball and football. Mostly because with a little boost of a good opponent, I think the men's basketball team could also sell out the Garden. Whereas I'm not sure people are coming to the Garden to see the women play like another good team. But the people that will come watch UConn play at the Garden are probably coming regardless, especially if they do a single admission doubleheader, which would be fucking
That's
awesome.
What they should do.
That would be so awesome.
Who else did we discuss? I remember thinking
like Maryland, Auburn, because Benedict Florida. Does have the connections with Auburn, and that is a great football school. So you know,
but what I don't know how much value a New York City game has to Auburn.
That's true.
Who mentioned Stanford? Because that'd be fun.
Yeah, Stanford, I could definitely see because all the schools like that have big New York City.
Well, what about UCLA?
Or USC? Either of those could be possible. UCLA seems more plausible. UCLA UConn at the Garden in basketball.
Men's and women's, a lot
of fun.
Yeah.
Men's and women's.
I would go down for that.
Plus Mick Cronin.
Oh God, I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna remember he's there consistently.
Yeah, no,
I'm
never
gonna be watching a game at like midnight in you know December.
See him on
and I'll be oh God.
It's gonna take me the first time UConn plays Cincy in men's basketball and they show the new coach, I'm gonna go, what the fuck? And then it'll click.
3 feet.
Yeah, then it'll click. The
John Brennan, is that his name?
John Brennan.
Brennan.
What about UNC? Really do you think UNC football could sell in New York?
Did you say UNC?
Yeah, would UNC football sell in Yankee Stadium?
I don't think that's a big enough brand.
Yeah. The basketball would be fun.
I was gonna say like Duke would also be like a really fun basketball matchup, and they would probably like to have have some games in New York just generally.
Yeah, it might be too much of a road game.
There are a lot of Duke grads in New York.
Duke tries to get a game in New York every year anyway. That's how we ended up playing them at the Meadowlands for years.
And their women's basketball team is good too, so that would be like two really good basketball.
That one would
games.
Be a lot of fun, and it'd be a football game that maybe we could compete in.
Yeah, yeah. It would be
presumably
a blowout
if we're functional by then.
Who's buying tickets to that though?
I mean, honestly, yeah, that's for the fun. Yeah, Yankee Stadium football game. Like Peter and I went to the one at Fenway against BC, and like that was a fun.
There were a lot of people there, and neither one of those teams was impressive.
The Army game at Yankee Stadium was a lot of fun.
Like it's not necessarily a thing you want to do like every year, but like every once in a while, having one of these novelty games in a random place like Yankee Stadium, like it's fun to do it. Like whatever.
It's hard to see though, because we could get a home and home with Duke.
Right. Like,
what's the?
Can we?
We want to do it with a team that wouldn't come to East Hartford.
Has Duke played a non-conference road game ever? Oh, you're talking about football.
Because we could be like a home neutral with Duke and throw that game in Yankee Stadium and then also play basketball with them, because that would just be a fucking blast.
I'll say
it would be a lot of fun if they would actually come play us in basketball.
That would be a lot of fun. Mostly because I want to go there and play them too.
And honestly, from their perspective, they should
do. Yeah.
If I played an ACC schedule, I wouldn't be scheduling road games at UConn. No.
ACC schedule plus you get a Big Ten game every year.
Hmm. And they always get a good Big Ten game.
Plus a tournament, too.
Right.
And the Champions Classic.
Yeah, so basically everything else in their schedule is going to be like UNC, Wilmington, and App State.
One thing I was surprised about with the football schedule, and this kind of ties back in, is I thought Benedict would have to get creative with trading basketball games in order to fill this schedule. So part of when we're talking about this like New York event and playing football games generally at Yankee Stadium and basketball games generally at MSG, I mean, do you guys see like an avenue? Is that the future of filling out an independent football schedule, of doing like home and Yankee Stadium, home and Madison Square Garden?
There's not a ton of space, just because with 20 conference games, I don't know how many. Like, it'd be cool to schedule some home and homes, but if we're doing anything with any other league and playing in a tournament, it's going to be tough to fit them.
That's the thing. And basketball has to schedule 4 home and homes with AAC teams as well, at least in the immediate future. And I know on the men's side, it sounds like Memphis is going to be one of those teams. I assume for the women, USF will be, and then they'll just need 2 more. But that's a few other games that will take up space.
You got to think we're going to play Temple, maybe also still in football.
Haven't Temple and UCF already kind of been rumored to be on those football schedules? Yeah.
Well, UCF is playing.
UCF is on the schedule.
Right. When does that start?
2021, I believe.
They're buying a game. They're buying a game from us.
Yeah, they're buying us, which is hilarious.
For $1 million, which is
they're
going to
spend, what was it, 18% of their TV money on us?
Also, keep in mind,
that's my favorite thing.
This AAC TV deal is super backloaded. So, what they're actually getting at the front end of the deal is a lot less than what they're getting at the back end of the deal. So, it's probably even more than that. It's probably closer to like a third of their
$1 million. I don't understand how these schools are in operation this way.
How did these schools agree to this deal?
Well, think of the Conference USA alternative, you know? This is why Tulsa and Tulane are celebrating like they just hit the lottery, you know?
Conference USA and the MAC, like, the teams make 6 figures a year on their TV deals. It's insane.
I just went back like a week or two ago and reread the piece where I basically said if UConn doesn't go to the Big East, they're going to die in the American, which was my way of calling UConn a bunch of cowards for not going to the Big East, which didn't age particularly well.
It worked.
They took your advice.
We'd still be in the AAC, except that you pulled down David Benedict's pants in front of everybody.
And at no escalators.
But what are the odds that David Benedict has ever listened to this podcast?
He's listening to this right now. What's up, Dave?
What up?
Well, I know he was like,
if Dave is listening to this, if Dave is listening to this, I want him to know I apologize for the thing that I wrote that made him cry.
Yeah, he got really mad at you in the Connecticut Post.
He did. He got mad at me in the Connecticut Post.
That was fun.
And since then, my opinion on him has improved 5,000 times.
He probably likes me. I wrote a very nice piece.
Yeah, yeah, I wanted to transition to that.
You wrote it before I could. I wanted to write that piece because I wanted to apologize to him.
I would have co-written it with you. We could have had, shared bylines.
We don't have the technology to share bylines.
I don't think we should apologize, Russ, because I feel like that was part of, like, he needed to learn that it was some tough love, needed to learn some things, and he was a little defensive at first, but ultimately he came around. He's on our side now, and I feel like had you not told him he needed to, like, read the room a little better, maybe he would not be in the Big East.
Listen, I'm not going to take credit for the Big East move and for the football schedule and for everything else.
Not like President Donald Trump.
Right. I won't take credit for it, but I will say this. My criticism of David Benedict was that while he was trying, he didn't understand what UConn fans actually wanted and where they were coming from. And since I wrote that, UConn has gone back to the Big East, scheduled some football opponents that we actually care about.
Free student tickets.
I mean, I'm not saying, but, you know, I'm kind of saying.
And also they gave us donors free super fucking cheap tickets.
I got $8 tickets for the Baylor game.
I got so many tickets. I got tickets to so many games. And
I want to know who the fucking brilliant guy in the ticket office.
I think it's a girl, actually.
Or lady. Man or woman, human person, who said, you know what we could do to get more people to come to the games is charge less, and they'll go. And suddenly, oh, my God, fucking genius.
It sounds crazy, but tickets were $30 to men's basketball games for way too long.
Yeah. Well, games that, like, nobody was
going
to go see.
Yeah, exhibition games.
I had, like, a few games in mind that I knew I was going to buy, and then when I saw the prices, I bought tickets to more games.
Yeah.
Like, they got
you. I've already given the money. You know, I've already donated. That was the only reason I had it in, is because I've already given the athletic department money. So
I gave the athletic department $19 when the Big East thing happened.
I've given them more than $19. But
and because of that,
you can round up.
All right, I gave them $20 when the Big East thing happened, and for that, I bought, I think it was 5 tickets to the Baylor game for a friend, and then 2 tickets to the Memphis game. I hope my dad's not listening to this because that's his Christmas present.
No one's listening.
All right, great. So I've saved money. It was great.
I feel obligated to remind you all that at any point you can get credentialed and sit on press row for free.
Oh, we're already credentialed.
Peter, what were some of the other things in your Benedict piece, part of his successes? I forget now.
Well, one of them was, like, the stadiums and stuff, honestly know the least about that. So
yeah, I wrote that section.
That, you guys were just like, also they built the stuff, and I was like, oh, cool.
It's cool that they're building stuff.
It all looks great. He's doing a great job. But mostly, I was mostly impressed with, I feel like we haven't talked about it in a while, but I don't want to understate how big a deal the Hurley hire was. Like, he looked at the situation. He said, this guy's not going to be there next year, and he's the guy we want. Short of Billy Donovan leaving the NBA, there wasn't a guy I would have preferred to Hurley, other than guys like Krzyzewski. Yeah, and that's not, you know, the guys who aren't leaving their job.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to cut the cord with Ollie, I think before a lot of people would have, and I think we can all now see, like, oh God, it was absolutely the right move.
Yeah.
So being decisive and then, like, getting the best guy and beating an ACC team that we used to compete with to do it while we're still in the AAC, and then to follow that up with the Big East move, I think everybody went from feeling like this basketball team is never going to matter again to I'm really excited about the next few years of UConn men's basketball.
And I think our biggest, like, worry, certainly my biggest worry about Benedict, was that this was clearly a stop on his career path. And I actually do kind of still think that, but I thought I thought he would have played
it safer.
He'll
take the Auburn job if he gets offered it, certainly.
And more power to him, go for it. But, you know, I thought he would play it safe. And so I was always just kind of worried that he would do his best to, you know, fundraise and build stadiums, but not do the hard stuff that might come with consequences because it might cost him. And God damn, has he acted with like a bunch of courage, like some really, really hard decisions and some really like really courageous moves. And I am very impressed.
I think for me, like,
they might not work out. Like, you know, he should have kept Diaco and not hired Etzel, but the
I turned around on that, man. Did you not read the piece? I turned him right around on that.
I mean, I still think I would have preferred someone good to Etzel. I think you could have sold the donors on like a, you know, a professional who's going to show up and do the job, which is not Etzel at this point. But
talking about a man who just won a football game.
Yeah, UConn has doubled his win total from last year.
Did he win a football game or did he beat UMass?
In FBF school. Yeah,
that's right.
We will be playing every year.
I'm fine. I'm thrilled to have a new rival in the University of Massachusetts.
I actually am too.
State flagship school in New England.
Yeah, I was.
I wonder what the betting looked like on that 9-point spread.
Well,
probably people.
I lost
like,
$40.
You kind of beating anyone?
I was blown away that it was two scores.
I saw a colleague downtown today who is a UMass alum, and he saw me and he said, "We're going to be really good friends." And I said, "Or just bitter, bitter rivals." And he said, "No, we don't care."
How bitter could this rivalry be?
I'd actually like to play them in basketball, in all seriousness.
I would love to.
I would like that too.
I want to play them in every sport every year. I just want them to always be in a league below us.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'll play you guys.
I want to play them.
You're also going to play Davidson
and
LaSalle.
Fordham.
While I'm playing Xavier and Villanova.
Right.
It's like when Newcastle plays Sunderland in like the FA Cup.
All right, no one cares.
No.
How great would it be though if like the first game of the season every year was UMass?
The either exhibition? Like, that'd be great.
Or at their place every year.
That'd be an awesome exhibition.
Last football game and the first basketball game.
There we go.
Ooh,
just play
like that
every Thanksgiving weekend. Friday play UMass at Foxborough. Saturday play them in basketball wherever.
I think we should play them conference championship game weekend because neither of us will ever have a game that weekend because we don't
have
a conference.
Play the U game conference championship weekend. I fucking love it.
Megan,
let's
please call it by its real name.
We have a two-team conference. And that's our conference championship.
Russ, I heard it.
It's the New England Football Conference.
Make sure that ends up on the podcast.
What kind of bowl tie-ins we can get. Let's see. Let's host one at Rockville High School. We'll
you know
call
what?
It
make a fucking trophy.
The Wheelock Bowl.
The Corey Pusey Bowl.
The Corey Pusey Bowl. Yes. The Corey Pusey Memorial Bowl.
If you make a trophy for that game, UConn more often than not will end the season with more trophies than UCF.
There you go.
I mean, don't discount UCF's ability to make their own trophies.
I bet they actually have the trophy. I bet they took it and then lied about it. Like, we didn't even want it, but they've got it. They're like,
you know
they've
what?
Got it in a fucking shrine.
It's definitely not in Mike Enright's house.
Okay.
Mike, we know you're listening. We know
Mike,
you have the trophy.
Give us
Mike,
the trophy, Mike.
Give me the trophy.
We know you have the trophy, Mike.
How much would it cost to get another one of those
put
made?
The trophy in the back.
If you can't get another one of that trophy made. Like, you could get a replica, but that doesn't have the magic. That doesn't have the magic of being the one that was left on the field by the winning team because they really didn't care.
What if you make a comically large one?
Like a novelty, like
the size of
a big check.
Like a life-size version.
Oh, man. I will buy a replica if somebody can source it for me.
I will buy the real one. I would pay
that too.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
I would contribute to that.
I would also contribute to that.
And we could just pass it around ourselves like the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
I will make the check out to Mike Enright.
Mm-hmm.
Won't
mm-hmm.
even give it to UConn. I will give it to Mike Enright.
Yeah.
I will give it to whatever Mike Enright needs us to give it to.
Name your price, Mike.
The trophy.
Name your
whatever
price, Mike.
I hope this thing is found in some trash heap in 40 years and somebody wonders why the hell UConn ever played UCF.
No, it's Connecticut. So you know it's in somebody's basement or somebody's attic. Somebody has it.
It's a storage unit.
Somebody's frat house.
Shit out. Somebody's got it. And I want it.
Now all I'm picturing is Mike Enright having a frat house like he's in old school.
Listen, I
listen
don't
to Guns N' Roses.
Hell yeah!
Take me down to the paradise.
I will sell my body for the conflict trophy.
No one's buying that.
There's actually one thing we got off topic, which never happens. Meet you can prepare. That I wanted to say about our real David Benedict. That the thing I found most impressive about this is that every other school lets football make their decision, because like that's the conventional wisdom. Football runs college athletics, and David Benedict was willing to actually be like, you know what? It doesn't run it here. Because it doesn't, and I think it's always going to be a futile prospect to pretend like football was ever going to be that important here, and to make a decision that so flies in the face of like what people are expected to do when they're in his job. Like, to Tyler's earlier point, like that really took some balls, because later somebody's going to look at that resume and be like, so what was this all about?
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going with that, because whatever his next job is, that is 100% not going to be the case.
No.
So that's why, also, that's particularly why I was so impressed by it.
Also coming from Auburn, it's not really like, I'm willing to like give him the benefit of the doubt there, that he just like didn't believe whoever told him, no, basketball runs the ship here. It seems like it's a scenario where it took him a little bit to get that, you know, maybe a little longer than we would have liked. But once he did, all of his decision-making fell in line with what our priorities are.
I do wonder, too. Someday we're going to talk to Benedict. It's going to happen. But one of the
things... And it looks like he did this without entirely sacrificing football.
No.
Yeah, because that's the other part, is this is going to be... If he can continue to schedule well, presumably with more games in the Northeast, this is going to be better. You're going to be playing more power conference better games, and you're going to be traveling a lot less.
Yeah. And we're going to get paid to travel.
And I think, you know, there's been a lot of sort of like, oh, it's just good feelings, whatever. But I think the big difference is he understood that, and the school understood that there's like a quantifiable value to those good feelings in the form of donations and increased ticket sales and all that stuff. But like, also, I think we're going to end up with a legitimately more interesting two UConn people schedule for football. Uh-huh. Like, as we were talking about earlier, like people were never going to get up for ECU or Tulane or Houston, even when they're good. Like, I was at that game where we played Houston. Houston was undefeated. We were playing for a bowl shot, and the place was 2/3 empty.
Yeah, it was like 19,000 people.
That was a great game, and nobody showed up because no one gives a fuck about Houston.
That's the thing that other AAC fans don't get, because, you know, if this were basketball, fine. You know, bring in a good team, whoever they are, and you could draw people. That's not the case in football. Like, if you were to tell me, I know nothing about like volleyball, but if you were to tell me we're going to go to a volleyball game, you could go to the game against Syracuse or you could go to the game against Wyoming. I don't care if Wyoming's the number one team in the country. I want to go see UConn play Syracuse because I want to beat Syracuse in something. And it's the same attitude that I have towards football, because football is not the sport that we care about. And that's what AAC fans can't get through their head, because we don't prioritize football the way that they do.
I do also.
So give us the schedule with the teams that we want to play. Yeah. I don't care how good they are.
I agree. The last thing that I was going to say, like, what I wonder about Benedict is, you know, you just mentioned, Megan, like, you think he, or I think it was Alex, he got here and might have realized, like, the extent to which basketball drives the ship. I also, like, I would just love to hear candidly how much harder football was than he thought it was going to be. You know, like, I want to know what his plan was when he came in and how fast he realized it was not possible.
There must have been some serious culture shock coming from Auburn to UConn. Like, because, I mean, let's be honest about this. Like, I don't think you could pick a more diametrically opposed place from Connecticut to where he was coming from. Like,
hey, Auburn just went to the Final Four.
Listen,
just saying.
No, I'm talking, I'm not just talking about like
culturally.
I'm talking about like the human beings, like the culture of the place. Like, Connecticut has a very, like, we're New England, but like we're unique. Like, we're not, you can't come up with any sort of preconceived notions about Connecticut, because what our priorities are really don't make any fucking sense a lot of the time. And it's mostly just about sort of like our ingrained, like, this is how we do things here because that's how we do them. And like, you kind of just have to like learn it all, because otherwise it just, it's not like there's any like rhyme or reason to it.
But also just, you know, coming like Auburn's never more than a good coaching hire away from being a national contender in football, because right. it's fundamentally an easy place to win. It's just not easy to beat Alabama. Yeah. But like you, anybody can, if you're good, you can go there and you can win 10 games. That's, you need, I don't know who could win 10 games at UConn at this point. No, I don't know if anybody could.
No, no one's ever done it.
The fact that he's managed to raise as much money, because I think that's what we heard when he was coming, that there was a lot of like, he'd done a lot of facilities work, and that's been really important, because UConn did have some pretty garbage facilities for our Olympics teams. Like Pender's having to recruit to that piece of shit stadium. Like it's a miracle he managed to do what he did with the team. And now they're like building the new stadium. They're going to have lights there now, and they're building this new performance center. They got an $8 million donation from Tony Rizzo, who played on the soccer team, I think, back in the 80s, and then, like, became a hedge fund person. I don't know.
He probably sucks.
He's got a shitload of money, and he doesn't suck because he gave $8 million to UConn. And
yeah, but really, how many dollars does he have?
I mean, he probably has a lot, but either way.
How many dollars is he giving Republicans back to keep his taxes down?
I mean, I don't know. But that now all of our Olympic sports are going to have new locker rooms, new coaches' facilities. Like, yes, we're building this hockey arena that like maybe doesn't make a lot of sense, but you're giving Kavanaugh some actual like good on-campus practice facilities to recruit to. Like having softball and soccer, you know, you're getting a new Maroney. Like these are, that's a big deal to like get all of this stuff done all at once. Like that's a shitload of money, and he's actually like managing to make it happen, supposedly. Like baseball is going to be able to play on the new stadium this spring, and soccer will be in New Moroni in the fall. So, I mean,
the best part about the new baseball stadium is that the fucking Tulane blog doesn't have to make the joke about no lights anymore.
Got fucking lights now, Fear the Wave. We've got the lights. Yeah.
It's hilarious that like that was the burn, as we all yeah. like remember. Like what time of year is the fucking AAC tournament in baseball? It's the spring, right?
May. It's always hot as balls.
It's like I never even know when it's happening until the day it's happening, and then I start noticing the Tulane tweets about lights, and then like UConn goes and wins the tournament. I'm like, all right, cool. I just found out this sport was happening, and we just won it. So okay.
See, I think that's a pretty hilarious self-owned from the Tulane blog, though, because like they're in a position where they actually know what goes on with their baseball team.
Yeah, and that's, by the way, the Fear the Wave blog is probably
going to say to us.
The Fear the Wave blog, by the way, is probably the best part of the American.
100%.
So shout to them. I just always think it's funny that that's the hill they die on, and they're dying on the hill, and I just wake up and I'm like, wait, baseball?
I mean, but how much of that is shtick? Like, think about how many insane things you fucking people say online.
We don't have any shtick. We don't do bits.
I mean, everything I say. I put a price tag on a tweet this morning. Somebody pay me. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll finish this bot up. Somebody here?
Hello?
I didn't hear anything.
Hello?
I heard a knock. My dog is barking somewhere in this house, because that was a poor
decision.
Could
somebody open the door, please?
Oh, my goodness. It's our good friend David Benedict Cumberbatch. How are you, David?
Good evening. It's fantastic to be here. It's an absolute pleasure.
What time is it where you are?
It is 5:12 a.m.
Wow.
Thursday.
I didn't know you could do that so fast. I thought that would be funnier. David, are you here to tell us about the fine fare and beverages at J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut?
I would. I've heard some good things about the wonderful Double Fuzzy Baby Ducks.
The what now?
It's an IPA, an Imperial Double New England. And, you know, of course, growing up in Shropshire, I lived next to a pond, as all Englishmen do.
Yep.
And every day I would see the fuzzy baby ducks, and I would just wonder what it would be like to drink them. And
yep.
At J. Timothy's Tavern, you can drink it all the day and all the night. It's 8.2% by volume.
You can't drink it all day, then.
I also don't think J. Timothy's is a 24-hour establishment.
Sure. 8.2% by volume, which of course is 42.3% in the metric system. And you can get a 12-ounce draft for just $7.50, which
ooh. You can't afford not to.
Right. You'd be a fucking fool.
You can get proper pissed.
You can get proper pissed and watch Sunderland in League One.
They're playing Tulsa.
Why would you? If you're a racist enough, I guess. Sunderland fans are racists, is what I'm saying.
Well, good thing I'm not a Sunderland fan.
You better not Jeez. Be.
All right. Well, thank you, David. We appreciate it. And as always, the fine folks at J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut.
Thank you so much. Buy football tickets. Middle Tennessee State. They're coming.
Fuck you, Middle Tennessee State.
Let's have a rivalry with Middle Tennessee State.
I was just about to say that. Fuck them. Fuck the Blue Raiders.
We need to get Buffalo on the schedule as our regular rival, like in the 2003 like NCAA football games. That was that was always rivalry week.
Yeah, it was. Mm.
Because you know I want a rivalry with Benny the Butcher. No? Is nobody else familiar with Buffalo rapper Benny the Butcher?
No.
No?
No.
No?
No. Nope.
Right, why would you know about anything Buffalo?
He's good.
Some wings there, I guess.
I can't get those wings here.
You got those wings at J. Timothy's.
J. Timothy's wings are better than any breed of chicken they serve in Buffalo.
It's true. It's a true statement.
Well, so now that we know what the upcoming football schedule looks like for this coming year, what else needs to be done to make UConn going Indian football successful? Obviously, we need a TV partner to air some of these games. I mean, what else do you guys see as sort of like on the to-do list for Benedict?
I'm not super worried about the TV deal just because I think we know that SNY will buy our games at the very least, and that ESPN Plus will probably broadcast them outside of that region for some nominal fee. So the games will be available. We'll get paid more than Conference USA gets paid for their entire slate of sports for that, which is ridiculous.
It can't be deemed a success unless Resch is doing color commentary.
That's fine. I'm fine with Resch. With Resch and I don't know, I don't have a good Joe D name joke. But for me, the big key is I want some home games against, you know, your various Syracuse's, Rutgers's, Boston's, College, etc. Mm-hmm. of the world. I want like the schools we used to be in a league with to play us on a semi-regular basis so that every year we've got a couple of home games against teams that I genuinely give a shit about.
Let me ask you this.
Miami, you cowards.
Yeah, fuck you, Miami. Michael Irvin.
Fuck you, Miami.
Yeah, Michael Irvin specifically.
Ken Dorsey.
Yeah, Michael Irvin. I'm going to keep shouting
Willis
him out.
Willis McGahee.
Let me ask you this.
Shaman Tools.
My thing, I want to add in my thing that they need to focus on is recruiting. And what this independent deal does is it changes the narrative of UConn being the worst team, the geographic outlier in this conference, and it at least gives them the opportunity to go to recruits kind of like we did in the early 2000s and say, hey, we're going to play Syracuse and BC, and BC maybe doesn't want you, so why don't you come here and you can kick BC's ass or Rutgers's ass or Syracuse's ass. That was a recruiting pitch that really worked for us, and it's one that we really don't have access to anymore, and we haven't really figured out a way to not have the 120th best class in the nation the last several years.
Hey, we're at 109 right now for 2020.
Ooh, look at that.
Making so leaps.
So I think the indie status, it gives us the opportunity to find a pitch that works for us and also to change the narrative. And if this current coaching staff is not the one that can take advantage of it, then...
And it's not.
Then that might be something we have to look at in the next year or two when certain buyouts expire.
That kind of gets me to a point I wanted to ask you guys about, which is like how sustainable, even if they fill the schedule and they get the opponents that we think UConn fans will care about, if they can't win, how sustainable is this?
How can't is can't? Like, are they going 1-11 every year? Because that's not sustainable.
I mean, they could win six games a year with the kind of schedule they're setting up. Like,
what if
I think that's
don't?
The other thing is like the schedule is more winnable.
They're not going to win. They're not going to win six games on the schedule they have next year.
No. I'm talking about, like, in theory, the University of Connecticut, with the kind of schedule that Benedict has been setting up, could, you know, be in the six games a year region without having to be doing things dramatically differently, like spending dramatically differently than we are, really adding more resources than we currently are.
I think we need to spend more than we currently are.
We definitely.
Well, dramatically different, but
I think that they need to increase the football coaching budget by about 50% minimum.
I would think
300%.
Didn't have to pay out of his own pocket for his assistants. That would be a start. Yeah.
Hey, I almost bought John Dunn's house. That was cool. I guess my thing though, right, is like, granted, I'm way more pessimistic, I think, on UConn football and football in Connecticut than probably the group as a whole, but I just kind of wonder what happens when the novelty of going Indy wears off. Like, is a 6-win team that averages 25,000 people a game at the Rent sustainable?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And I think the ceiling is really low without a huge paradigm shift. But I mean, as long as there's something out there where you can have UConn games on TV and they're competitive games and we're beating teams, you know, that we like to beat, we can, you know, puff out our chests a little bit and feel good about the program. I think that's enough to make the investment, you know, not a total loss.
That's the beauty of college football too, is there's so many bowl games that there's something for everybody to play for. If you can go 500, you're probably going to get a postseason game. And that could be a thing you win on a banner you put up in your stadium. And we'll put it up. And that's any bowl game we win.
And that's why the lack of bowl ties argument towards going independent never really made sense to me. Because there are so many bowl games that they take 5-7 teams now.
Yeah, I think every once in a while you'll have a couple of teams. Like last year, there were 3 6-6 teams who didn't get a bowl game, but usually they're pulling a couple of 5-7 teams.
Yeah,
I'm also excited.
And we don't hang banners for anything.
Oh hell yeah!
Literally anything. We do not give a shit.
If we don't win, if we just go to the crappy bowl game, we'll put up the banner.
Totally.
We gotta cover some space. Yeah. Because we got some empty seats.
We
got
to cover 20,000 seats worth of banners.
If you're listening and you want your logo forever shown at Rent Square Field, we're here.
The J. Timothy's Tavern Bowl.
Hell yeah.
At Plainville High School.
That sounds like the dopest bowl possible.
Wings for everybody.
I'd like to put in a vote for UConn getting a tie with the Hawaii Bowl, because we'll make it like every 4 years or so, and then everyone gets to go to Hawaii every 4 years. That'd be pretty
like
dope.
I don't know if that's actually going to go to Hawaii.
Hey, let's expense it.
Can I skip the game?
Yeah, you don't have to go to the game.
Can we pair it with the Maui Invitational?
Yes, we can.
Would that work?
No, that wouldn't work at all.
No, it would not work. Be too early.
I mean, you could stay there in Hawaii for a month.
For a month,
that would be cool.
Okay.
You live in Hawaii now, Russ.
All right.
I know I keep making jokes about this, and I think on the last podcast we did like 5 months ago, I suggested UConn should schedule 12 bye games. But I actually am like having that fallback revenue source so that they don't need to lean on attendance so hard actually does.
Or at all, because we'll have no home games.
It really does comfort me. Like,
it's going to be – you want to talk about what's not sustainable. Having a football team that has literally no fans – because it doesn't play any home games, that is definitely not sustainable.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. I mean...
You are. You just said that. You said 12 bye games.
Yeah, that was hyperbole, but...
It's hard to tell with you sometimes.
What about 12 games a year against UMass? Can we do that?
I believe I also suggested that.
How about 6 games against UMass, 6 games against Army? Let me get some variation.
I am looking forward to the Army games more than anything else, because their stadium is great.
Yeah,
I can't be the only one who thinks. I'm sorry, Mitch. What were you saying?
It's the best place to watch college football anywhere. I highly recommend it. Once we go there, go tailgate with the troops at 6 a.m. They got guys flying in off planes.
What if I am disrespecting them?
They might kick your ass.
Oh, if we like get to playing Army every year, I will disrespect the hell out of the troops.
I will disrespect the troops so hard.
We definitely need to defeat the troops.
Yes. So we didn't really talk about the fact that we are going to have to play Liberty, like, at least twice, and probably more than that. Like, we do have to discuss the downside of this, and I would just like to, because we know David Benedict is listening to this podcast, I would like to say, like, I understand why we're playing them next year. Like, I get it. It was kind of a necessary evil.
Deuce
and obviously... We were going to have to, like, return the home game. Like, okay. However, let's try not to schedule them if we can avoid it, and B, we maybe should do a thing.
Okay, I know I wrote that we should make it like a Pride Day. Yeah. I'd like to amend that.
Okay.
The home game against Liberty should just become the gayest thing possible. Just make it absurdly gay.
Like rainbow stripes on the field.
Rainbow stripes on the field. You're only allowed in the stadium if you're gay.
Do you have to like be gay in your heart, or do you just have to be like, I'll act gay?
You could act gay. You could act gay.
Well, that whole section is toast.
Or is it? This is, we do say it's an M-rated podcast.
All right, before we wrap up, Peter, do you want to give us a quick update on men's basketball recruiting?
Yeah, so we're just trying to lock down a big man at this point.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Indications.
Before you go, give us, so since our last pod, they got Andre Jackson. So can you give us just a quick and dirty scouting report on what to expect from him?
He's just, he's got a lot going on. There's been a lot. I personally think he's underrated, and I know everybody says that about the recruits they get, but I actually think this guy, it's ridiculous that he's rated as low as he is. He's one of the very best athletes in his class. He's, for a guy his size, he's a very good rebounder, and he's a very good ball handler and passer. He does everything well except shoot, which he's not as bad. He's not like, you know, Talik Brown as a shooter or Sid Wilson. But I think he's going to be a super duper impact guy pretty much right away. He's very talented, like Stanley Robinson type athlete.
You can learn how to shoot.
Just like jumping over people's heads, dunking all the time. Like if, as long as, you know, the offense is functional, I think he's going to do a lot of fun stuff.
Freshman can't shoot anyway. He has a year to figure it out.
Except for Ben Gordon and Ray.
Should we get him
Vance Jackson somehow?
Should we get him involved in scrap metal work, like from the start, or?
So there's one, and I guess we should pause and say we're gonna try to do some season preview content, including a pod. So we're gonna hold off on a lot of men's basketball stuff. If it never happens, you know why it never happened. But
we were arrested by the troops.
But as it stands right now, there's still one open scholarship. So, Peter, what are your thoughts on what they're trying to do there?
Well, right now they seem to be pretty invested in trying to get Javonte Brown Ferguson, who is, you know, he's said it's down to us. The A&M?
Yep.
Or Kansas. I always forget A&M and Tech. I always mix them up. But anyway, I think he's a UConn lean. Most people seem to think he's a UConn lean. That could be happening soon.
No, he's a reclass.
He would be reclassing from 2021 if he were to move into the 2020 class, which all indications are that he will, though he will be pretty young. He was legitimately a 2021. Like, he just turned 17.
If he does reclass, whereabouts do you think he would be ranked?
Well, I've read top 50. That feels high to me from what I've seen.
I think that's what Corey Evans' arrival said. Somebody asked him, right? It was Corey, right? Somebody said, where would he be? And he said 50.
And, you know, I'm not the professional scout, but from watching him, I think he's a top 100 big man for the 2020 class. He's probably closer to top 60, top 50 for 2021. Or maybe he's top 20 or top 50 for 2020, and I'm just wrong. But that's my gauge on what I've seen from him, and you know what I've read from scouting reports. But I think he's definitely their first choice right now. I think that's kind of, I'm not really sure what happened with Cardwell. Like, on a number of levels, I'm very confused about what happened with Cardwell, because
I think we've learned in the past that if you're confused about what happened with a recruit,
I mean, somebody else usually paid them.
Yeah, it's usually because he got the bag.
Well, it's not just that. It's that, like, so much information that was getting passed around was very wrong. Like,
everybody
thought he was about to commit, and, like, everybody seemed to think he was on campus. Like, there were multiple people saying that they'd seen him on campus. Like,
his visit went well.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like, Jake took a big hit on that one, which...
Yeah.
And if he, like... I don't think he made it up. I think he legitimately heard that.
Yeah.
And like, you remember how long ago he was the first guy to say Jackson had a great visit, Jackson's going to pick UConn. And then a few days later, everybody else followed him. He's got some sort of connection. Hmm. A lot of people got Cardwell wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Something changed at the last minute. I'm not really sure. But we were very in on him, and then all of a sudden we weren't. Maybe the staff decided they preferred
JBF.
Javonte Ferguson Brown. Maybe Cardwell's looking somewhere else. I don't know. But that was very strange what happened there.
And what about Cliff?
And then there's the other guy whose name I can't pronounce, Mario Madding, who was like almost a URI player, and then he went to junior college.
Oh, yes. This is the
I don't really know what to think of this guy.
Center.
Yeah, I've watched his highlight videos. He's not a center. He's a center.
Yeah.
He plays, I think he'd be like a Cook light player in college. He seems talented in like a highlight video, but you know, what the hell does that mean? He can handle, he can shoot. It looks, you know, for a guy his size, he seems very fluid, but I don't know the quality of competition. And he was going to go to URI, so it's not like
there was
like
a weird thing with that. He finished school in December, high school, went to URI for second semester. It appears, and they expected him to be a wing, but he did not play at all. Then they recruited over him, and he went to JUCO, where now he's playing center because he is tall enough, but he's a slim boy. He's very slim.
I mean, he seems like he's one. There's a lot of those lanky shot blocking guys. I mean, he could turn out to be good. They saw him, they liked him, and like I said, he seems athletic. He seems skilled. It just seems like a very strange player.
Strange. It's very strange.
And then the other one is, you know, Cliff Amarui, I think, was their first choice at center. He's now saying he's going to wait until spring.
That dude shopping for a Kentucky offer.
Yeah, he wants to go to Kentucky.
Yeah.
And I think there's a distinct chance that he ends up at Kentucky. But we'll see. You know, because I'm still of the opinion we're going to end up having at least one more open scholarship. Yeah. I don't think Gilbert's going to come back after he graduates. And I think there's a good chance that, you know, someone in the front court is going to play so little that they're going to say, all right, I'm not going to do this. I mean, I could see, you know, if Wilson doesn't feel good about his minutes, or, you know, obviously we thought Whaley was going to go last year. I think one of those guys might decide to try and find some place that they can get more minutes. So I could see them getting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joe, who knows? Maybe everybody sticks around, but I think at least they'll have at least one extra spot. Because I think Gilbert goes. And so maybe they try to get Ferguson Brown now and then see if, you know, what happens with Omarui in the spring. Be tough to bring in both in the same class, but
unless they get JBF and then he doesn't reclassify.
That's another possibility, but I think there are big programs that want him for 2020. Yeah. Why wouldn't you just do that?
Right? Yeah, it would have to be a reason on his end, not UConn's end. Like a personal thing.
So, I mean, that's the kind of thing. If they are back in the market for Cliff, that might mean JBF moves.
I mean, JBF
back out.
And Jackson were on campus for first night with the large boy from Bristol, whose name I'm blanking on, who's not until 2022,
I think. Yeah. But who knows? They always seem to end up moving up at the last minute. Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, doesn't – he's very, very tall.
He's very tall.
He doesn't seem white. Like – well, yeah, that's – you know, he is white. But he doesn't – from what I've seen of him, which it admittedly isn't much, he doesn't look like a high major player to me. But we'll see. He's got a Syracuse offer already.
Yeah, he's young.
We offered him. So maybe he'll, you know, kind of get coordinated over the next couple of years. I mean, apparently they think he's going to end up being like 7'2", so –
same.
Maybe get another Thabit, but this one from Bristol instead of Tanzania. It's a bit of a bit closer to home.
All right, we got sleepers.
Shout out to NB or G. Shout out G League draft pick Ashim Thabit.
Ashim. Yeah.
And G League draft pick Sam Cassell Jr. Actually, I take that back. He's in the pool. I have no idea if he got picked. Did that happen already?
Yeah,
yes.
It happened.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right, because I saw EC Matthews go. By the way, we've claimed EC Matthews. He went to UConn now.
Yeah, he went to UConn.
Just FYI.
Are we Rutgersing EC Matthews?
Yeah.
Yes.
The Hurley family seems to really love him a lot, and we, you know, we have them now. So
we
family's family, you know. It is what it is. You don't pick Bob your family.
Is my dad.
Yeah, we are all now Bob Hurley Sr.'s son.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I am Bob Hurley
and daughter.
Senior.
Yeah. And daughter.
I'm Russ.
I'm also Russ.
Russ Hurley.
All right.
Pearl Russley.
Pearl Russley. Damn it.
this is so stupid.
Are we done?
Yep. All right, everybody. That does it for another edition of the A Dime Back podcast, brought to you by J. Timothy Siren of Blayville, Connecticut. Until next time, we'll see you later.
What?